Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net.
I want to welcome back to the show someone that we've had on in the past, and it's fair to say that you're a friend of the show now. And the thing is, with me and people I know, me and my friends, in the past we used to say, like, we're, everyone's having kids, but that's not the case now. Everyone's having books. Everyone I know around me has been writing a book, loads of my friends. And the one I really want to read, the one I'm really interested in the story of, is your one, Jackson Feely. Welcome back to the show. So tell me about the book, Fearproof.
Fearproof, yeah. Well, let's start with the title, actually. So it took me a minute to figure out what to call it. I've been wanting to write a book for a while, but I didn't want to write a book just about me. I didn't want to write a book that was sort of my, like, biography, because I feel like my story is kind of only just beginning. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to write something that would help as many people as possible, not just in terms of the trans conversation, but in terms of the human conversation, like in terms of everything that we go through and, you know, what we've discussed before, transitioning as a human being and facing the changes that frighten us so much. And I've learned so much in the past few years from reading books that are more catered towards sort of personal development and building self-awareness, that I wanted to try and write something that was similar to that and that could have the same impact, hopefully. And so that's kind of what it is. It's like it's a self-development book. It's something that is about the reader with elements of my story sort of woven in. And Fearproof is something that I came up with because we don't want to be without fear. We want to be able to feel the fear and walk through it and continue on anyway and become stronger in the process.
So the book starts with the line that you don't have to be fearless, you just have to do it scared. So, like, what does doing it scared actually look like in your day-to-day life? Because that sounds pretty daunting, doesn't it? Like, going around, are you scared? It's a positive scared, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes feeling fear and feeling scared makes people feel like they shouldn't do it, when actually, more often than not, the thing that you're most frightened to do, or the decision that you're most frightened to make, or the conversation you're most frightened to have, you know, the social media post you're the most frightened to post, is the thing that is most authentic to you and would probably take your life in the direction that actually might achieve true happiness. So doing it scared looks like the biggest things and the smallest things. You know, sometimes it's just getting out of bed. Sometimes it's, you know, if you're not in a great mind frame, going out of the house. Sometimes it's having a conversation you really don't want to have, or, you know, coming out to your family if you are, you know, trans or you know, a member of the LGBT community. Sometimes it's something that can be so massive, but also it's the things that are so small as well. And it's just about taking one step at a time and having one brave day at a time. And I think that's what leads to change, and that's what leads to a life that makes you actually yourself and happy.
You write that, like, every life-changing story begins with something breaking. So when do you think you broke? When did your own kind of unraveling begin? And did you know that that's what it was at the time?
Yeah, I mean, I think I broke a lot of times. Some bigger than others, you know, and obviously talk about in the book how I've transitioned gender, but that is by far not the only transition I've been through in my life. And so I think I've broken several times, especially when it came to transitioning, because that's kind of when I really, really hit the floor in terms of having to make massive, massive life changes. And, you know, obviously for me, that decision was, well, I do this or I die. And that's the kind of point that I was at. So that was the real breaking point for me. But in between those things, you know, it was sort of dealing with coming out of the military, or, you know, dealing with coming out of the prison service, which I have done, and, you know, coming out of relationships or grieving people you might have lost, you know. It's all of that and all of that.
All the big life challenges that we all get, essentially. So this isn't just a book about gender identity, is it? It's a book about how do you as a human being make your way through a big change. And I guess the potential number of people impacted by that is so much bigger than just a gender identity question, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I, you know, like I said, I didn't want the book to be about being trans. I've tried so hard to find this balance of it's a human conversation, but the undercurrent of it could possibly help people who either want to transition, or people who have family members, or people who don't understand it. I want someone to read it and it not be about that, but then hopefully it could change their mindset at the same time, because there is that undercurrent of it. Like, it's not about my transition, but my transition provides a depth to the human experience, if that makes sense. Because transitioning gender, leaving a relationship, losing the parent, you know, losing part of your identity because you've been in this job 25 years, all of those things carry the exact same emotions and processes that you have to go to keep going.
For people who haven't read the book yet, what does it mean to kind of be fear-proof? Is it kind of possibly to ever actually be truly fear-proof?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of, the idea of that came from, it's kind of like trying to build a bulletproof mindset. And that's what I have always, and I'm always trying to do, as difficult as it is. Whether we all become 100% fear-proof, I think the proof of that is that you keep going. I think you're only not if you don't keep going, you know, if you fall victim to living a life that isn't true to you. And so I kind of created this kind of dictionary definition of fear-proof in the beginning of the book. The state of mind where fear is no longer the barrier but the compass. The ability to feel fear fully without letting it dictate your choices. The practice of meeting risk, uncertainty and emotional exposure and moving forward anyway. And a way of living built not on the absence of fear, but on the courage to act alongside it. And I think we all strive to. And I'm hoping that this book can help people, you know, make those leaps and those jumps that perhaps fear would have stopped them doing.
There's kind of the first half of the book called The Unraveling, isn't there? I'm interested because I hear this a lot in, particularly in like the genre of self-help books and stories of people that have had a bit of a narrative arc that's kind of self-help. They start often with a break-in rather than the fixing point. And you've done this. And I guess, do you think the unraveling and the break-in is kind of what's providing the fuel for the rest of the journey?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I've spoken about it so many times before that, and I speak about it in the book a lot, you know, there is no end point. There is no top of the mountain. There is no, I've made it. It's, you know, I wanted to be really brutally honest in terms of, you jump off this cliff, you don't know when you're going to land. You don't know how long it's going to take. You don't know, you know, this whole idea of the messy middle and being in this limbo and not knowing when life is going to get better after you've made that massive change. It doesn't just magically improve overnight, that you have to go through this hard bit and you have to have faith in yourself to move through that bit. Because when you've let go of a part of yourself to make room for a new version, that middle bit is really, really hard. And that's
quiet
why so
this.
Many people, the quiet, yeah, like the bit where you have to sit with yourself and you have to,
because you say this, you don't you? This is
build.
A big thing in the book.
Yeah, like for example, when I came out of transitioning, you know, and we've spoke about this before, when I said that, I felt like I'd lost everything that Jess was, you know, this sort of ex-military rugby playing gay woman, this 27 year identity that I'd built. I felt like I'd lost all of that, but I didn't know who Jax was yet. And so that middle bit, I felt worse than I've ever felt in that bit, because you don't know yet. It's like you've lost that person, but you've not built the new person yet. And so the ability to, and what we're all so frightened of, sit with yourself and sit with your own thoughts and let all those things rise to the top that is terrifying. But to build that self-awareness and figure out what you really want your life to look like and who you really want to be and try and unlearn everything that society's told you to be is terrifying but so powerful. And I think
does not feel exciting as well, because it must be terrifying, but
yeah, exactly,
a clean slate.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and that's kind of I didn't want the book to feel negative, but I didn't want to not highlight the difficulties, because that's where the power is, you know. And life is up and down, you know. I think I've always thought when it flatlines, you're not here anymore. It's done. So it's gonna, you've got to enjoy that, and that's what it's about, as difficult as it is. And I think there's a lot of negativity associated with fear. I think there's a lot of good things about fear. I think there's parts of fear that we don't understand, and you know, when I talk about in the book the different types of fear, you know, the fear that keeps us safe, you know, our intuition, the things that prevents us from being in danger. But you've also got the, you know, fear that
holds you back.
Fear that holds you back, yeah, you know, fear that sort of an irrational fear, you know, when it comes to some things that we overthink. But then you've also got the fear of vulnerability, and that's the most powerful one, because the fear of vulnerability is fear of showing up as your true self, and that's what holds us back more than anything else. And I think if we can use that, you can seriously change the direction of your life and how happy you can be.
In the quiet bit, which is the bit that you said is the most awful bit, I guess the breaking and the decided that you want to go down a direction is, I guess that's euphoric. It's like, wow. In the quiet bit, like the silence after a big change can feel like, and as you discuss as well, pretty much unbearable. What did you learn about stillness and almost discomfort as well, like in that period that you call the quiet bit in the book?
Yeah. I think that's the bit that makes most people turn around. You know, it's like when you might build yourself up over years to come to this decision, you know, to leave this relationship, or, you know, come out as trans and start this whole new life, leave that job. What happens is you do that and you've built yourself up to this, and you're effectively, like the metaphor in the book is, you jump off this cliff. But then what? Like, I feel, you know, it's easy to think that, right, this is my big moment, but actually we're not living in a film. You know, it's not this
day
sort
day,
of like Netflix montage where it's just like the 2 minute Rocky cutscene and you're there. It's this whole change, this whole quiet part could take a long time for you to figure it out. And you have to be able to try and sit there and let all of those suppressed and uncomfortable and frightening thoughts and feelings come up and understand it and allow yourself to feel those emotions. And I think what happens is, people make these big decisions and then, you know, 6 months later they're back on LinkedIn trying to find the same job because it feels so uncomfortable that it tells you you've made a mistake. It tells you go back, you was happy before, go and do what you were good at, when actually you made that massive decision for a reason. And if you can stick that out to the other side, that's where you will see the massive changes and improvements in you.
I guess it's like when you start a new job, isn't it? Have you ever started a new job and gone day one, oh my God, I love this? Every job I've ever started, even ones I've loved, I've started and gone, oh my God, what the fuck have I done? I've got to do this every day. And then you go through the bit of getting on with it. And then there's just a bit of depression hits you. You're like, oh, is this it? And
yeah,
I guess that's
exactly,
true of
yeah.
every big change, isn't it? There is that arc, and you've really latched onto that arc. And I think anyone that can read this and the changes you've made, you can translate them into any big change in someone's life. The getting out of a big relationship is another major one, isn't there? There's certain things that really define who you are: job, hobbies, relationship, gender being the biggest, I guess, obviously.
Yeah.
So this arc kind of seems to work for all of them. You say the quiet doesn't hurt you, it heals you. What are some small ways people can begin to face that silence without running away from it, do you think?
I think spending more time alone is massive. I think we're all very, you know, and I've been guilty of this so much, but we're so frightened of being on our own and being in our own brain, our own mind, because it can be such a scary place to be, feeling that, you know, those emotions or that loneliness or that what have I done or that. It's so frightening. I've been in that situation so many times. Like before I left the Prince Service, I didn't have a day off for 12 months because I was so afraid of, like, I was so afraid of, you know, I was so attached to the routine and the feeling I was okay when I was in uniform and I was doing something. And so I couldn't physically cope with being at home or, you know, or not having anything to do and in that quiet moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and that was nothing to do, you know, with transitioning. It was just me struggling to sit there and try and understand everything about myself. And I think building that self-awareness and really looking in the mirror and sort of tearing yourself apart, really, in a good way and in a hard way, in terms of you want to understand everything about yourself, because the more you can do that, I think the more untouchable you become, the more unbreakable you become, because you're not affected by other people's opinions. You know, there is no ego. There's just you, and you know your soul, and you know who you are, and you become really comfortable in that. But that's not an easy thing to do. And that's what I kind of wanted to put out there, is if you can push through that, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm saying it's worth it.
Manosphere says this as well, doesn't it? This is kind of a popular narrative in the Manosphere. And I think that there's some things in bro culture that they get right. Some very limited amount.
This
idea of being, you know, people who say, I'm going to lock in for winter, fuck going out, whatever. I'm going to lock in and I'm on that goal. And I feel like this is a bit like that. It's like, it's the lone wolf. It's celebrated in bro culture, isn't it? Where you see, like, I went away for a year and I come back and I was shredded and I had £1 million in crypto. And it's like, I think there is something in that. And this is like a much more positive version of that.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so.
It's a lot more positive, obviously.
But, you know, if we can, you know, hit that audience too, you know, that then we might change some mindsets in that world
humans, isn't it? We like that kind of, we like that narrative redemption arc, and men in particular are drawn towards the idea that, and it's popularized, of going away, working on yourself. And I think this really kind of actually speaks to that in a way that maybe, like, maybe you hadn't thought about just until I said that then, about maybe not about crypto and stuff like that.
I didn't, to be fair. You know, you're right. And, you know, there is nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. You know,
because I think that's fine.
I want to reach as many people as possible, because, you know, like we were saying before, it's a human conversation.
Absolutely.
And that's what I always try and do, whether it's in content or talks or interviews, is, you know, my experience is human, you know.
Yes.
Being trans is just a depth to that. And that's kind
of... This is more important now than ever, isn't it? This, what you're saying there. Do you not... This is going to break slightly from this conversation we're having just for a second, but the narrative over the last few years has been sometimes one of... And I've done a lot of searching about, look at where we are politically now. Donald Trump's in. We're looking... We might have a far-right government. And all our rights are going to be pushed further down. Listen, what concerns me is that some people... And sometimes I feel like, have I played into this? We've had such technical arguments amongst ourselves for such a long time that we haven't focused on the reality of progress is genuine human connection. I can think of a number of influencers in the LGBTQ plus space who've really missed that. You've never missed that. You've always got that. I think that you working in a prison and knowing that it wasn't about, they didn't get the technicals of this, the biology, the medicals, but what they did get was that you were someone that they respected. And I think that we need to regain that narrative that you are now taking us on, which is, I happen to be trans, but here is my story and you connect with me on the basis of, I'm just a guy like you. I'm just a human being. I'm just a human being with a narrative arc that you can latch onto. And that's just something that you do brilliantly, and other people, like, I don't want to be negative. I think we're past that. We all need to join together. But other people are very snippy. Right. Well, you didn't get that right. And I'm like, well, how's that going to fly on the streets of bloody Leeds? Do you know?
Yeah.
And this is why I love your story.
Yeah. Thank you, mate. That really means a lot to me. And, you know, I do think you're absolutely right. And I think we've spoke about this, you know, 2 years ago, whenever we first met, about with this book, I'm not trying to get anyone to agree or understand the trans conversation. I'm going to tell you the depth of my story, and in some way I know that it will connect with you. It's irrelevant of the trans conversation. There's parts of my human experience that are similar or will hit the emotion of yours. And I think we have to be, in terms of, you know, having these conversations, we have to be open to hearing other people's thought process. Otherwise,
even if
how
we don't
do
like
we
them,
change the narrative? I've always been open and willing to speak to anybody. You know, I don't believe that opinions make someone a bad person. I want to understand where that comes from. Why do you feel like that? You know, and can I provide a different train of thought about that, or make you maybe just second guess it? Because if there's a half a percent of doubt in what someone believes, then there's room to change it or expand it or learn more or understand more. And, you know, like we've always said about being on TV or on a podcast just as me, and then hearing the story, and that kind of makes you go, oh, well, I liked him before, so now that I know that he's trans, does that mean I'm all right with trans people? And that's kind of the same thing I was trying to do with the book, is it's just this undercurrent of, I'm not telling you to accept that. That's just part of my experience and what I've learned.
I think that, yeah, we're saying the same thing, aren't we? Which is that I don't think any progress is going to be, well, limited progress is going to be made in any conversation around anything. It's not just trans issues or LGBTQ plus issues. If we're force feeding people a technical argument of kind of like someone's university sociology thesis from 2005, and if you don't get it all right, then you're wrong. But it's like, well, we're going to lose. Let's get back to basics and just connect with people. And what you're doing is connecting with people, and the work you're doing is. And you know, I think that you'll find that most people, and you know this, this was why you still do it. Most people like you and connect with you. Like all of us, we get a bit of hate sometimes. But most people like and connect with you and love what you're doing. Do you know, there's a big theme of grief running through the book. And I wouldn't say it's not just for people, but for versions of ourselves. I think you grieve, Jess, sometimes. I've never experienced anything like that. But I presume you do, and you've said you do. Why was it important to write about grief in a self-development book? Because I think it really works. But why was it important to you?
I think because there's this element of grief there in everything that we go through. I think just as growing as human beings, to achieve the next stage or to become the next version of ourselves, we have to make room and let go of a part of ourselves. Like when we were talking about the relationship or the job, you know, the career, you have to grieve the role you played in any transition to make room for the new. You know, sometimes the things that got you this far won't get you through the next, and you aren't going to stay the same your entire life. You have to learn and grow, but that also means taking away some things. And that's something that I went through for a long time in terms of becoming Jax, you know, and taking everything that I loved about Jess with me and forming this new identity of who I truly am. Whereas in the beginning, I felt heartbroken because I felt like I'd lost it all. And actually, you know, it's okay to grieve the bits that you need to let go and take with you the bits that are still part of you. You know, when you lose someone you love, you have to grieve the person you love, but you also have to grieve the version of you you were with them. You know, if you lose a parent, you have to lose the part of you that was a son or a daughter. You know, you have to grieve that part of you that's heartbreaking, and you have to do that to be able to then, you can't heal what you won't look at. And so I feel like you have to do that to be able to move forward and take them with you.
I guess if you don't attempt to heal and you just keep it inside, it comes out of us in such weird ways, doesn't it? In ways you really can't control.
Exactly, yeah.
Just look at what happens to a lot of, I think, my own subject of expertise is it gay men in particular around my age. There's usually a shitload of stuff that's gone on, and it's coming at them in weird ways. And I think that's true of all of us, actually.
100%.
You say that you can love where you're going and still mourn where you've been. So what did grief teach you about kind of like who you are and self-acceptance?
I think it makes me feel proud that I've found the ability to do that, you know, because I look at younger me now and just want to give her a massive cuddle and tell her it's going to be okay. Yeah. And I feel like I can do that because I allowed myself to grieve and really try and heal, you know, who that person was, what that person went through. And, you know, I think we're all just dealing with things that is from childhood, you know, and if we can look at that younger us and tell the younger us that it's okay, or, you know, go through what we went through and try and heal that part of ourselves, then we can become whole and we can move forward. Whereas I think, like you just said, you know, you just end up in this circle of going back and going back and the same behaviors and the same
things
that hurt you. And yeah, and you know, I didn't want to suppress anything. And I think I've always been someone who, no matter how much pain it puts me in, I want to learn as much about myself as possible so that I can feel confident in that. And I can try and understand why I might be feeling anxious that day, or why that might make me feel really uncomfortable, or, you know, what is it, just to try and prevent me from making decisions based on pure emotion and make decisions on what is right and what is true.
Did the transformation ever feel like too painful to continue? There's got to have been moments, especially with how the journey your life's been on, when you just thought, this is so hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the butterfly metaphor is something that has been sort of part of me from, like, I think I had this butterfly tattooed on my neck about a week after I came out, you know, like, because it just immediately changed. Obviously how I looked, but my identity. And people ask me all the time why I've got that butterfly on my neck, and we've probably spoken about this before as well, but it represents transition, it represents transformation. And I think we as human beings appreciate the beauty of a butterfly, but we fail to recognize everything that a butterfly had to go through to achieve that kind of beauty. And I think it's an amazing metaphor for the human condition and the human experience, in terms of having to go through all of those things to really fly and really become the real, true, authentic version of yourself. There's definitely been moments, especially in the beginning, in the first 12 months of transitioning, where every day was like, well, I do this or I die. And that's kind of what kept me going. You know, go back to work or I die. I had this conversation or I die. I learned to laugh at myself. You know, if I don't learn all this about myself and become secure in this, the world around me is going to break me. Because
so that was the hardest bit then, that 12 months.
Absolutely, yeah. Because yeah, every day you're reminded that this is too hard. I think when any of us make a decision to make a big change in life, we want the result there and then. We want it to feel better now, especially when it comes to transitioning. You know, I wanted to look how I look now 5 years ago when I first said it, where in reality, I looked exactly the same. I just shaved my head and expected to look really masculine and was like, there we go. Spent my whole life being called a man. As soon as I identify as one, everyone sees a girl. It's like, you know, and so that bit where you know, especially in terms of obviously just talking about transitioning now, you feel like a freak. You feel like, how do I get through this bit? How do I get through this? How do I enjoy this journey when it's so fucking painful, and having to walk out into the world every day and have these conversations, and you know, so many people are confused by it, and you're terrified to walk into a family party, and you know, you don't know how you look, and you just feel like this alien. But I think knowing that it's about the journey. Because if we all got dropped off at the top of the mountain, we wouldn't appreciate it, because we haven't been through that climb and we haven't been through everything it took to get us there, which is actually what feeds you and fulfills you and fills your own cup and fills your own soul with the achievements. And so although we all want it now, it wouldn't mean anything if we got it.
You've written about letting go of people who only loved what you refer to as the edited version of you. Do you find compassion for them? Or for yourself in that process?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think when we change, you know, when someone stops drinking, for example, sometimes the friends they had won't like or accept the version that you're becoming. And that's okay. You know, sometimes when your parents don't want you to do anything, that's through their own fear of wanting to keep you safe. And sometimes that can hold you back from taking those things, you know. And so it's not always about cutting people out and getting people out of your life. You know, I very, very rarely do that. Unless
have you had to do that? I imagine you have. We've all had to at some point, but in your journey.
Yeah, you know, in different situations, yeah. Not, you know, obviously there's aspects of that when it comes to transitioning, but, you know, I've changed so many times over the years. And I think sometimes that's said as an insult. And it shouldn't be, you know, of course I've changed. Like I wanted to change. I wanted to become you know, better or this better version of me. But sometimes people only know the one that helps them feel better. And so when you start doing something different or you want to achieve more or you want to push yourself out of your comfort zone, what happens is you hold a mirror up to the people who've known you in a different way, and it makes them feel uncomfortable that they're not doing that. And so it can go either way. You know, you can keep doing that and inspire, and then you can keep doing that and inspire someone, or you can say, actually, I need to put some distance between me and that person because they're not the greatest for me right now and what I'm trying to achieve, or the person I'm trying to become. Maybe they're not the best person for me to be around or the healthiest person for me to be around right now. And that's okay. And that doesn't mean that you have to hate that person or, you know, completely cut them out of your life. But sometimes I think you have to make some decisions on what is best for you, because it can become dangerous in terms of pulling you back to a version of yourself that you don't want to be.
I think I've discussed this with a few people over the years, and I've discussed this with my husband, which is like, I'm a different person to the person he met in his 20s, a bit more of a dickhead in my 20s. And so is he. And we both said, well, we're like, we fell out at times. And I'm like, well, we're like different people. I was like, literally on a cellular level, compared to who I was when I was, I don't know, 23. I'm a completely different water. I'm different cells. So I've So in essence, we're a completely different thing mentally and physically. And I always find this an interesting point to raise in these things, where if like someone says to you, you've changed, well, you go, well, if I don't,
yeah.
If a living thing doesn't adapt to its environment, it just dies. Have you noticed people have treated you differently since your story was a bit more of a public story?
Yeah, definitely. I think people relate to it, you know, and it surprised me. The thing is, what inspired me to start doing it, obviously, is seeing the impact it had on prisoners. You know, and seeing the impact that it had on people who had no idea about this stuff, who had to do some deep sort of self-awareness, looking in the mirror work. And they related to all of these things, and that transpired to them wanting to stop taking drugs or wanting to stop self-harming or wanting to understand their own trauma, you know, wanting to show up as themselves, stopping being embarrassed and ashamed of the scars on their arms, you know. All of these things, you know, giving me letters saying that you saved my life from a man who spent 20 years in prison, who just watched someone who was terrified continue to live their life, do it scared every day, and help him in the process as well. And that's all they saw. And so that sort of obviously inspired me to do that on a bigger scale, because since then, I've not had messages from just families and people who need to transition or who are struggling with that, but people who have left a toxic relationship, people who were afraid of trains and have got on a train that day, you know, people who have stopped self-harming, people who have left that career, people who have chose to have one brave day at a time. You know, the only reason this book has come about now is because the publisher listened to my talk 7 months ago and decided that day to make one frightening decision, one brave day that she was avoiding, completely changed her life in the last, I think she said to me, 207 brave days later, and told me that it needs to be a book, because she completely flipped her life on its head. And now, in her words, 207 brave days later, her life looks completely different. She's on a completely different trajectory, you know, doing all these amazing things and thinking this could change people's lives if they did that.
How does that feel to know that you influenced that? Because we can all think about the big picture, what people are going to think of us, all that kind of stuff. But it's them individual stories of someone who hasn't just gone, I'm going to buy whatever brand of lipstick that person on the internet said to me. It's someone who's just gone, I'm going to change everything and I've took my inspiration from you. That's got to make it all worthwhile.
Absolutely. You know, I think that's the only thing that keeps me going a lot of the time, because, you know, like I've been dealing with my own sort of like grief and identity crisis, you know, in the last sort of 12 months, just because figuring out where I'm going or what I want to do, or missing work or missing being in a uniform and all these things. And so sometimes the things like that is the things that keep you going and things that remind you why you do what you do. Because I really struggle to accept things like that. You know, I said to her the other day, like, that wasn't me, that was you. Like, you made those decisions, you did those brave things. I can talk about it, but you did it.
That's because you're very modest. Like, it's still
and obviously
you.
She's she on the other end is like, no, it was you. And I'm like, no, it wasn't. I didn't do anything. I just told you my story, you know. But it does mean the absolute world. And I think I might not accept it on a surface level, but it definitely, you know, heals me and keeps filling my cup in that way that I need it to keep putting it out there, because it can be really difficult to try and figure out ways to keep having these conversations and putting it out there. And, you know, especially if you're not in the greatest space yourself. So just knowing all those things is what allowed me to put everything into this book. And that's why I really, really want to get it out as far and wide as I can, because I do really, truly believe in that book. I believe that it can change people's lives, because it's not about me. It's about the reader. So it's not a big book. You could read it in a day if you wanted to, and I know that it will change your life.
So what was the hardest chapter for you to write, like emotionally, physically? Was there any bits of the book that were like, this actually, this is hard, sticking this down? Because I guess they say that a good way to deal with grief or trauma is to journal. And essentially nothing is more of a journal than literally writing down a narrative of your life and trying to come up with a positive sort of overarching thing. It's got to have felt a certain way. I imagine there's bits of it that are kind of like you're going through all of the emotions all over again. So how did it feel to do certain bits of it?
I think, in all honesty, I think I've been talking about all of this stuff for the last few years. So it was definitely easier than sitting down with a blank slate and going, where do I start? Because I know what kind of narrative I wanted to sort of build. But talking about grief and talking about the difficult things and talking about the impact on my family, or, you know, definitely the stories I've got in there about me when I was younger and stuff. It's amazing because I'm where I'm at now, but it does upset me sometimes about that little girl and what she went through or what she was feeling. And so I think it was really a healing process for me to do that, because I feel like it was a message for little Jess as well, and like a real sort of coming about moment of doing that after transitioning for the last 4.5 years. I think it is a great message to myself as well as anyone else.
Did writing Fear Proof heal you a little bit in ways that you didn't expect? So this sounds like a book that you haven't forced it on anyone. You've literally been asked in the most powerful terms, please write a book. But did you find the process? You have, haven't you? Yeah, you didn't just go, I just want to write a book. Like everyone else I know just flies a book out. Someone's gone, literally, you've changed my life, please write a book. I mean, I wouldn't want to say no to that. Did the act of writing it help you kind of heal you in ways that you didn't expect?
You know, like we were just saying, it's definitely a message to me as much as it is to anybody else. It's a book that I continuously need to go back to as well. You know, it's a message that reminds me how far I've come, but it's also a message that keeps me going. You know, like there's no way that I don't have more hard things coming. So that's sort of life. And I want this to be, you know, a Bible to getting through hard times. And inspiring people to move forward and just keep going and keep doing it scared, you know, and embracing fear and using it to your advantage. So yeah, it means a hell of a lot to me. And I'm really excited to listen to people's, you know, reviews and how it makes people feel. What's really strange is when I started to write the book, I'd learned all of this stuff from just experiencing life and learning about myself. And then I'm going through these different things with the editor, and she's like, oh yeah, that's called this. Like, you know, like
there's a name. Yeah.
When I talk about the sunk cost fallacy or all these things, Oh, this is actually like a psychologically researched thing, but I just learned it from doing it scared and living and experiencing and figuring out and looking and sitting in the quiet and making the leaps and doing all these things. I'd learned that these things are true. I have not written a book that is just full of psychological research. I've written this book that is telling you something that I've experienced, and that's real. And I promise you that that's right and that's true. Well, that will happen, or that's what this is. And it's not just me doing a lot of research and wanting to write a self-help book. I've lived all these things, so I promise it's true.
But this is not just a self-help book, is it? It's funny in that it's a few things in one, isn't it, this?
Yeah, like I promise you, it's not just a textbook answer. I've lived it. It's true, I promise. But if you don't believe me, here's some proof. you know.
No, that's like genre defying. That sounds like a Hollywood kind of statement. It is a genre defying book. No, it really is. So is Fear Proof the end of a personal chapter, or is it the start of another one? How are you viewing this? Is this a watershed moment? It's out there now. What's next?
Ooh, yeah, I think it's both. I think it's the end and the start. I think it definitely represents everything I've been through up until this point. I feel like it's definitely a representation of a sort of restarting my nervous system, which is shot to bits, and trying to now figure out, you know, how do I really want my life to look as Jack's now? And what that life entails and what I want to move forward with. So yeah, I definitely think it's both. I think it marks the ending of everything that I've been through so far and what I'm proud of, but also marks the beginning of, you can let yourself breathe a bit now and figure out how you want to live.
Honestly, like I said, I know a few people have written books, and it's become like I said, people, like all my friends are giving birth and all my friends are writing books. And of all the people that have written books, yours is the book that needed to be written. I know some people, I'm like, why have you written
a
book?
Thank you so much.
And the love to the dogs.
Oh, they've gone
love
now.
To the
Shut
dogs
up now,
as well.
Dad.
And yeah, fingers crossed with this book launch this week. I think it's a story that needs
so
to be
much.
Sold. Thanks for coming on,
mate. You all need to help me on the 6th. Come on, help me get a bestseller so we can spread it all over the world.
Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net. Top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.